Good morning and welcome to today's edition of Times the Brief. I'm Harvey Kojan, and these are the top stories of the day.
Five songs you need to listen to this week by Raisa Bruner. Lin-Manuel Miranda's new song, featuring the voices of over a dozen artists, is at once a celebration, an homage to West Side Story, and a call for unification in the face of tragedy, all in service of the people of Puerto Rico. Meanwhile, dynamic R&B artist Kalela searches for new modes of expression in a complex and haunting album that hints at her political agenda. Sweden's Leon brings her brand of rich, timeless instrumental pop alive on No Goodbyes. Detroit rapper T. Grizzly has a dark banger on his hands with the unapologetic Win. And Brad Walsh releases a body of work with Antiglot that makes us question what music can and should do. Almost Like Praying, Lin-Manuel Miranda. Hamilton creator Lin-Manuel Miranda has made his catchiest song yet with Almost Like Praying. He put this track together in just 2 weeks in support of the post-hurricane humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico, from which he traces his own roots, and it's a master feat. Mixing strains of Sondheim with modern pop production, Miranda tapped the voices of over a dozen renowned singers: Jennifer Lopez, Mark Anthony, Luis Fonsi, Gloria Estefan, and Rita Moreno, among them, to list all of the island's towns in a musical act of unification and support. As for the title of the song, the name Maria will forever have a different connotation on the island, he told Time. The hurricane happened to share the Sondheim character's name. Most of us know Maria as the name of a really great song in West Side Story. My brain started flipping the lyric. Say it loud and there's music playing. Say it soft and it's almost like praying. Blue Light, Kalela. There's an icy futurism to Kalela, melting smoothly into the warmth of her supple lyricism. On Blue Light, off of her long-awaited debut album, Take Me Apart, the forward-thinking R&B star starts with the basic building blocks, an eerie instrumental, a bass line, her ethereal voice. Then she throws in the electronic elements, constructing a song that's both intimate and strong. Boudica, Brad Walsh. You've never heard anything quite like Brad Walsh's new album, Antiglot, before. Composed entirely of body sounds, layered, lyricless vocals, and the noise he could make without instruments, the ambitious work is a resonant soundscape, in turns arresting and meditative. Boudica, composed and written by Enya, will take you through the emotional ringer. Like a Gregorian chant gone rogue, Walsh's performance elevates a simple hum into a complex journey from an ominous depth to something that sounds like hope. Created as a reaction to the U.S. political climate, Antiglot just might be the cathartic listening experience we all need. No Goodbyes, Leon. It may be called No Goodbyes, but Swedish singer-songwriter Leon's lush new song off of her just-released EP, Surround Me, feels like a welcoming embrace. While the Swedes of her generation are collectively best known for their propulsive pop, think Tuva Lo, Tuva Sterka, Zara Larsson, Leon's sound is more classic. Raised with a musical background, she sticks to a timeless style that's rich and orchestral. No Goodbyes is a perfect example. Cascading flute notes find grounded echoes in a voice equal parts floating and powerful. Win, T. Grizzly. Detroit rising star T. Grizzly brings total confidence to Win, which sees him rap with irrepressible energy over a hauntingly melodic piano backing track. Had to risk it all just to win big, he raps at the top of a poignant story.
Man cleared of killing his 2-year-old daughter after his 7-year-old son confesses. Fort Worth, Texas. Prosecutors dropped a capital murder charge against a Texas man accused in the death of his 2-year-old daughter after investigators learned that her then 5-year-old brother said he caused her death, authorities said Thursday. Anthony Michael Sanders, 33, was accused of smothering his daughter, Ellie Mae, at their home in the Fort Worth suburb of Watauga in 2015. Investigators believe Sanders held his hand over her mouth, possibly out of anger for interrupting his computer games. Jailed since April 2016, Sanders denied responsibility. He said he found his daughter not breathing after his son reported she wouldn't wake up. Prosecutors learned in August that the boy, now 7, told his mother he was responsible, the Fort Worth Star-Telegram reported. She didn't believe her son, but decided to tell authorities about the claim. Investigators say the boy cried as he told them that he accidentally rolled a heavy pillow onto his sister's face while they played and that he was unable to move it. He said the pillow had something zipped inside that made it heavy. At one point, the child told investigators that he hadn't told anyone else about the circumstances of the death because he was afraid that he would get into trouble. Court records indicate the boy made a reference during a counseling session a year or two ago that he killed his sister. But the counselor didn't address the statement and the boy wasn't asked why he said it. Tina Moore, Sanders' defense attorney, said his client was elated that the charge was dismissed. "He has denied it from the beginning," Moore said. An arrest warrant affidavit has stated the girl had bruises on her body and other injuries, but Moore says Sanders isn't responsible and will not face any new charges. A spokeswoman with the Tarrant County District Attorney's Office said that prosecutors won't discuss the dismissal of the capital murder charge or other aspects of the case at this time. An official with the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office said it was possible for a 5-year-old to overpower a 2-year-old and that the boy's claim that he smothered his sister with a pillow could not be disproven, according to a court filing. This article was posted by the Associated Press. The Novelist and the Explorer. What on earth do a Pulitzer Prize-winning novelist and a legendary marine biologist have in common? The ocean, for one. That less than 10% of the ocean has been touched by humans is a fact that delights the scientist, Sivia Earle, and the writer Jennifer Egan, explorers both. Brought together by time, Earle and Egan met to discuss the beauty and mystery of the underwater world and man's impact on nature. Egan, whose new novel, Manhattan Beach, tells the story of a World War II-era female diver, remarks on the ocean as a symbol. "It becomes kind of a metaphor for depth, for exploration, and for mystery," she says. To Anna, the heroine of Manhattan Beach, a dive is like being inside a dream. A description that Earle, the first woman to become chief scientist of the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, commends. But Earle and Egan are as fascinated by the ocean's fragility as they are by its magnificence. "We have such an appetite for life in the sea as products, as food, but we don't have the kind of respect that you're getting when you go in and meet them, up close and personal," Earle says. "We can't go back to a way it was 1,000 or 100 or even 5 years ago, but you can make things better. Will humans step up and work to save Earth?" Egan's teenage sons, she says, feel hopeless. "We have this ability to see ourselves from a distance, and yet self-interest is such a huge part of how we make decisions day by day," she says. Earle offers some hope. "Humans have the capacity to change the nature of nature. We can't change the laws of nature, but we can change." This article was posted by Lucy Feldman.
Jane Goodall, "We Don't Have Unlimited Time to Save the Planet," by Justin Warland. Jane Goodall has been at the forefront of the conservation movement for decades, helping to illuminate human understanding of wildlife and the need to protect it. "But never has the challenge been as urgent as now," she told Time. "When I began, there wasn't any particular need for conservation the way there is now," Goodall said. "If we carry on with business as usual, it will be too late." Goodall listed a wide range of concerns, including poaching and deforestation, as key issues affecting wildlife, but highlighted climate change as the threat with the potential to do the most damage in the long term. Still, Goodall remains cautiously optimistic, citing the passionate people she has met who are working to tackle the issue and noting that there is still a small amount of time to act before some of the worst impacts of climate change become irreversible. The remarks come ahead of the release this month of the new documentary Jane, which relies on 50-year-old archival footage to tell the story of Goodall's early work with chimpanzees in Tanzania. Goodall says she hopes viewers get a better understanding of chimpanzees and take action on the issues that threaten them and all wildlife. "We don't have unlimited time," she says. Do we or do we not care about our grandchildren? We've been stealing their future.
What does it mean to have OCD? These are five common symptoms. By Jeffrey Kluger. Having obsessive-compulsive disorder, OCD, isn't easy. The condition, marked by uncontrollable thoughts and behaviors, strikes about 2% of the general population, a figure that in the U.S. alone means nearly 6.5 million people. If you've made it past young adulthood without developing any symptoms, you're likely in the clear. You wouldn't know that to hear people talk, however. In recent years, OCD has become the psychological equivalent of hypoglycemia or gluten sensitivity, a condition untold numbers of people casually, almost flippantly claim they've got, but in most cases don't. Folks who hate a messy desk but could live with one for a day do not necessarily have OCD, nor do those who wash their hands before eating but would still have lunch if there was no soap and water nearby. Yet the almost sing-songy declaration, "I'm so OCD," seems to be everywhere. Some of the confusion is understandable. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, DSM, the field guide to psychological conditions, lists OCD among the anxiety disorders, and nearly everyone has experienced anxiety. The thing is, though, you've experienced headaches too, but that doesn't mean you know what a migraine feels like unless you've had one. Same with the pain of OCD, which can interfere with work, relationships, and more. The brain is conditioned to alert us to anything that threatens our survival, but this system is malfunctioning in OCD, says psychologist Stephen Phillipson, clinical director of the Center for Cognitive Behavioral Psychotherapy in New York City. That can result in a tsunami of emotional distress that keeps your attention absolutely focused. No single fear defines the condition. There are familiar obsessions like washing your hands or checking a stove, but there's also hoarding, hypochondria, or a terrible fear you're going to harm someone. People with a common type of OCD can even have paralyzing anxiety over their own sexual orientation. As with any mental illness, only a trained clinician can offer a reliable diagnosis. But here are a few behaviors that experts say can be genuine symptoms of OCD. Bargaining. It's common for people with OCD to believe that if they check the stove just once more or Google just one more symptom of a disease they're convinced they've got, then their mind will be clear. But OCD typically reneges on the deal. The brain becomes biochemically associated with the thing you fear, says Phillipson. Performing the ritual just convinces it that the danger is real, and that only perpetuates the cycle. Feeling compelled to perform certain rituals. Could someone pay you $10 or $100 or whatever's a relevant sum of money to you not to do a ritual like checking the front door 20 times before leaving for work? If your anxiety can be bought on the relative cheap like that, you may have an idiosyncrasy. You worry about burglary a little too much, perhaps, but you probably don't have a disorder, Phillipson says. For the person with OCD, he explains, the brain is signaling what feels like a life-and-death risk, and it's hard to put a price on survival. Being tough to reassure. For people with OCD, the phrase, "yes, but," may be a familiar one. Yes, your last three blood tests for this or that disease were negative, but how do you know they didn't mix up the samples? Since absolute certainty is rarely possible, almost no reassurance clears the yes-but hurdle, and that keeps the anxiety wheel spinning. Remembering when it started. Not all people with OCD can point to the exact instant the disorder first struck, but many can, says Phillipson. OCD is a sort of free-floating anxiety before the initial symptoms strike, but then it alights on a particular idea, the fear you're going to lash out at somebody with a knife when you're making dinner, for example. These experiences tend to roll off of most people, but for someone with OCD, the bottom falls out, Phillipson says. It's the moment when a panic marries a concept, he says. Like most bad marriages, it's hard to end. Feeling consumed with anxiety.
OCD is a matter of degree, especially since there are real-world risks associated with nearly all obsessive-compulsive triggers. Houses do burn down, and hands do carry germs. If you can live with the uncertainty those dangers can cause, even if they make you uncomfortable, you likely don't have OCD, or at least not a very serious case of it. If the anxiety is so great it consumes your thoughts and disrupts your day, you may have a problem. The D stands for disorder, remember, Philipson says. OCD causes your life to become disordered. There are proven treatments available for OCD. Medications, including certain antidepressants, are often a big part of the solution, but psychotherapy, especially cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT, can be just as effective. One potent type of CBT is a protocol known as Exposure and Response Prevention, ERP. As the name suggests, ERP involves gradual exposure to increasingly provocative situations under the guidance of a therapist while avoiding any rituals to undo the anxiety. Begin by touching a doorknob without washing your hands, for example. Progress up the ladder of perceived danger, a handrail on a bus, a faucet in a public bathroom, and slowly the brain unlearns the fear. Your Netflix bill is about to get more expensive, by Alana Akhtar. Netflix is offering something even scarier than the new Stranger Things season this October, higher prices for its most popular subscription plan. The streaming behemoth will raise subscription prices for the middle and premium bundles by $1 and $2 respectively. The plans, which offer consumers HD and either two or four screens at a time to watch, will change to $10.99 and $13.99. The basic plan, which only lets users watch on one screen at a time and doesn't offer HD, will remain the same price, $7.99. The fare hikes go into effect for new U.S. members today. Existing members will be notified of the price increase on October 19th via email and in-service notifications, a Netflix representative told Money. Members will have at least 30 days' notice before price changes go into effect. From time to time, Netflix plans and pricing are adjusted as we add more exclusive TV shows and movies, introduce new product features, and improve the overall Netflix experience to help members find something great to watch even faster, the company said in a statement. The fare hike comes at a time when more and more Americans are cutting their cable subscriptions for streaming services. Even after today's price hike, Netflix's $10.99 standard option is still an affordable option compared to competitor prices like HBO and Hulu. Hulu's commercial-free option follows at $11.99 a month, and an HBO Now subscription goes for $15 a month. Amazon offers a cheap option at around $8.25 a month, but you get a fraction of the content compared to Netflix. 40% of cancers are linked to being overweight, by Amanda McMillan. The rate of new cancer cases has decreased in the United States since the 1990s, but increases in overweight and obesity-related cancers, which now account for 40% of all U.S. cancers, are likely slowing that progress, according to a new report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC. In 2014, about 630,000 Americans were diagnosed with a cancer associated with excess body weight. Based on a review of more than 1,000 studies, the International Agency for Research on Cancer has identified 13 such cancers: esophageal, colorectal, endometrial, gallbladder, stomach, kidney, liver, ovarian, pancreatic, thyroid, and postmenopausal breast cancers, as well as meningioma and multiple myeloma. The new analysis, published in the CDC's Morbidity and Mortality Weekly Report, reviewed data from 2005 to 2014 on cancer rates in the United States. During that time, the rates of non-obesity-related cancers declined by 13%. Rates of colorectal cancer diagnosis also declined from 2005 to 2014, likely because an increase in screenings has allowed for more abnormal growths to be found and removed before developing into full-blown cancer. When colorectal cancer rates were removed from the equation, however, the rate of other obesity-related cancers increased by 7%. Carrying around extra weight is believed to fuel cancer growth in a number of ways. It increases inflammation throughout the body and alters levels of insulin, sex hormones, and growth hormones, all of which may trigger cancer cells to grow rapidly and uncontrolled. About two-thirds of the people diagnosed with obesity-related cancers in 2014 were between ages 50 and 74, and rates were higher among women than men, partially because endometrial, ovarian, and postmenopausal female breast cancers accounted for 42% of overweight and obesity-related cancers, the authors wrote in their paper. Rates were also highest in the Northeast compared with other geographic regions. Observational studies have provided evidence that even an 11-pound increase in weight since early adulthood is associated with increased risk of overweight and obesity-related cancers, they write. They do point out, however, that their report only tracked diagnosis of obesity-related cancers. It did not estimate how many of those specific cases were actually attributable to being overweight or obese. About two-thirds of adults in the United States are overweight or obese, defined as having a body mass index of at least 25 or at least 30, respectively. These people are nearly twice as likely as healthy weight people to develop esophageal, stomach, liver, and kidney cancer, the authors write in their paper, while obese people are approximately 30% more likely to develop colorectal cancer.
International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons Wins Nobel Peace Prize by Billy Perigo. The International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons, ICAN, has won the Nobel Peace Prize for 2017. ICAN was a vital actor in bringing the Treaty on the Prohibition of Nuclear Weapons to the United Nations, where it was signed by 122 countries. The accord was largely symbolic, as none of the world's nuclear-armed nations signed it. The Oslo-based Nobel Committee said on Friday that ICAN is receiving the award for its work to draw attention to the catastrophic humanitarian consequences of any use of nuclear weapons and for its groundbreaking efforts to achieve a treaty-based prohibition of such weapons, as it warned of the current increased risk of a nuclear conflict. The next steps towards awaiting a world free of nuclear weapons must involve nuclear-armed states, it continued. This year's Peace Prize is therefore to call upon these states to initiate serious negotiations with a view to the gradual, balanced, and carefully monitored elimination of almost 15,000 nuclear weapons in the world. In a Facebook post shortly after the announcement, ICAN said it was a great honor to receive the prize. This is a time of great global tension, when fiery rhetoric could all too easily lead us inexorably to unspeakable horror. The specter of nuclear conflict looms large once more. If ever there were a moment for nations to declare their unequivocal opposition to nuclear weapons, that moment is now. This award shines a needed light on the path the Berne Treaty provides towards a world free of nuclear weapons. They concluded, "Before it's too late, we must take that path." The prize, established in 1901, is awarded annually to the person or organization that has done the most or best work for fraternity between nations, the abolition or reduction of standing armies, and for the holding and promotion of peace congresses, according to the will of its founder, Swedish industrialist Alfred Nobel. Last year, the Nobel Peace Prize was awarded to Juan Manuel Santos, the president of Colombia, for his role in bringing to an end the country's 50-year war with the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, FARC, insurgency.
Lin-Manuel Miranda on the making of his new song for Puerto Rico by Ryza Bruner. Lin-Manuel Miranda isn't sleeping much these days. Quite literally, he spent the past week flying around the country getting a crew of famous artists, Jennifer Lopez, Luis Fonsi, Camila Cabello, Gloria Estefan, and many more, to record a new single, Almost Like Praying, out now to support the humanitarian crisis in Puerto Rico. Made with a riff on Sondheim's West Side Story tune, it's meant to be a unifying anthem for an island ravaged by Hurricane Maria, with all proceeds going to the Hispanic Federation's Unidos Disaster Relief Fund. The name Maria will forever have a different connotation on the island, Miranda explained to Time. Most of us know Maria as the name of a really great song in West Side Story, a really great love song. But for Miranda, he saw an opportunity to combine the two, the classic Broadway tale and the current crisis, into a way to help the island of his family's roots. My brain started flipping the lyric. Say it loud and there's music playing. Say it soft and it's almost like praying. That was half the idea. The other half was including the names of all the island's towns as a way to combat the terrible silence that greeted the hurricane's end. I don't think I heard from my family until 4 or 5 days after, he explains. Social media was filled with Puerto Ricans seeking loved ones by looking for updates on specific places. I thought, if I can manage to put every one of the 78 towns in Puerto Rico in the lyric, that's the song. That's what unites us all. Because our traditions emanate from those towns, and they're the source of pride and of power. The resulting song combines the voices of over a dozen artists, including Mark Anthony, Fat Joe, Gina Rodriguez, and Juan Leguizamo. If Miranda didn't know someone personally, like Gloria Estefan, no problem. Rita Moreno called her up on his behalf and got her into the studio the next day. They all contribute to what the award-winning songwriter calls the catchiest and most danceable song he's ever written. Many of the artists, he added, didn't even hear the track before agreeing to be a part of it. But to a one, they signed on, he said. These are just not ordinary times, he noted, so I try to do what I think I do best. There's only so much one song can do, but Miranda says the best way to combat feeling paralyzed by the totality of what's going wrong in the world is to take what action you can. There's no shortages of challenges, and there's no shortage of ways to do good, and this is just one of them, he said. Songwriting just happens to be his strong suit, and a good way to spread a message. Music travels faster than news, he noted. Music travels faster than anything, and if you can thread the needle and do it right, it lasts longer, too. Miranda is boosting the cause by also attempting to get more listeners for a Spotify playlist for Puerto Rico. If it reaches 50,000 followers, he's promised to share a throwback photo of himself dressed up as J-Lo in faux Versace and all for a college event. After seeing the photo, Lopez gave it her stamp of approval, calling Miranda cute. I've been holding it back for a special occasion, and this seems like a special occasion, if any, he added. Thanks for joining us. I'm Harvey Kojan, and you've been listening to the daily edition of Times the Brief. To get this sent to your inbox every morning, go to time.com/thebrief. You can also subscribe through iTunes or your favorite podcast app. I'll be back tomorrow. Until then, enjoy the day.